Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.
Welcome to the Patrice Brantley Show. We're helping others is the name of the game, and on this show, we push purpose, positivity, and personal growth. Today, we have Ms. Margaret, who's going to share her inspiring story of getting over burnout in the insurance industry. I got to tell y'all, I never thought that all these different industries had a different level of burnout the way that they did. But I've got to tell you, her story is truly a story from coming from tragedy to triumph. And now she's starting some new chapters in her life. So I am so excited to bring her in today to talk about her taking her trauma, her tragedy, and turning it into triumph. So welcome, Ms. Margaret.
Thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome. So tell us, what's your story? Give us a little background. What was your childhood like?
My childhood came from a very big family. My mother had 7 children. I am the oldest girl of 5. So I kind of know what it's like to be a leader. So yeah, it works out good for my life.
Well, I believe you've been placed in the right path to show us the leader that you are. So I think that's wonderful. What's one piece of work advice that your mother always gave you?
Never give up on your dream. Never.
I love that, because in this day of microwave dreams and being, you know, instant stars, people don't realize that it takes a lot of work to what they see in front of the camera. So I love that your mother gave you that visual and told you that at an early age. For you, what was the job that you were into?
I was an administrator, which is a clerk for an insurance company, responsible for answering phones, speaking with the customers about their payments, filing life, fire, and health claims. That was the role I played with this insurance company.
So now with this particular job that you had, at a point when you were young, did you stop and say, this is the job I want to do when I grow up? Was this that type of job for you?
No, ma'am. I never said that.
So what I'm amazed to find is I'm interviewing people and talking about burnout. I'm hearing people say, no, this was not my dream job. This was not the place where I wanted to be. What was it that drew you to that job?
Well, Ms. Patrice, I worked as a Medicare audit analyst for the federal government at one point. After they had layoffs, trying to get back into the field of having a job with good pay, it was just really hard to find. Until I dropped my expectations as far as pay, that's how I got this job. But after being unemployed for 3 years, you're kind of in a little crunch and you just kind of take what's out there.
So it started off that this-
And that's what I did.
So this wasn't the job that you wanted, but it was kind of like being in the crunch time point. Kind of talk to me about this particular job. How long were you in this job?
I would have been there for 6 years in August of this year.
So talk to me about the beginning of this job. When you came in, was there a lot of training? What was the first couple of days walking into this job like?
Day one, I was informed that this is not going to be the job you will get rich off of. I really didn't know how to accept that, but at the time I needed a job, so I took it. I was asking if there would be room for a promotion or growth, and no one ever gave me a definitive answer. But after being there for 5.5 years, I realized that answer was just no.
Wow. Because, you know, that's one of the big things that everybody looks for when they get a job. You look for, is this a place that I can grow? Is this place willing to invest in me? And here, you had been in this job, you asked the question before you walked in the door, and nobody ever gave an answer. Wow, how does that keep the morale? Are you able to keep the morale in the job after this moment?
No, ma'am, the morale is pretty much shot, but you know, if you find yourself in a position to where you need a job, you just kind of just deal and almost like walk around with your head down, but still smiling.
So for you, when you got into this job, when did you start to actually feel the burnout? Do you remember what year it was for you? because you were there almost 6 years. So when did you start to feel the burnout?
Burnout probably took place maybe within like year three, because I got to a point where I wanted to be promoted and I started asking for raises. And after speaking with people for a week at a time, and no one was like, oh, we're working on it, but it never came to fruition. So after year three, where I realized that I was never going to get a raise, I was never going to get a promotion, I was never going to be allowed the opportunity to do training to move up, it just started taking effect on me mentally and emotionally.
So to me, you're here, it's year three, and you're saying, I want to grow, I want to move into bigger territory with this, I want to do more. And it started, you said it affected you emotionally. What were some of the things that was happening with you? I always talk to people about the different symptoms of their burnout, because everyone's burnout is so different. What were some of the symptoms for you, physically and emotionally?
Oh my God, Ms. Patrice, it was to the point where I was having anxiety attacks on my way to work. I was having panic attacks during the time I was at work. I was having to take breaks to actually go to the bathroom. And I'm talking like real tears, and just trying to make it through the day, just unhappy, all day unhappy.
This sounds like the most horrendous experience to be in a space that when you're coming to work, and for those who've never experienced anxiety, I'm going to give you my view of what it is, and then I'll ask Ms. Margaret to step in. When you talk about anxiety, from my understanding, it's like having an elephant sitting on your chest. It's not being able to really fully breathe, and you can't really get a bearing with yourself. And then when somebody talks about a panic attack, it can go from as light as I can't breathe, I'm feeling tightness in my chest, to the room gets to spinning, and you're just in a space where you just feel so out of sorts. No matter what you do, you can't get yourself back together. And I just couldn't imagine living like this for a period of time over and over and over, because after a while, that would become the part that would really do it for me, because I would feel like, well, really, I don't have much control. I don't feel like I'm able to be my best self. And then this is going on. How is this affecting you outside of work?
Oh my God. Ms. Patrice, I had two daughters, and my daughters were to the point where they were like, Mom, we never want to have kids. We see what it is you're going through, and we realize that you're not in a position where you want to be, and we feel like you're too educated, you're too smart, you're too much of a good person to be limited to this type of job. So I hate to say it, as soon as my daughters graduated from high school or college, they left. They wow. got away from here because they did not want to end up on a job like the type of jobs I had to settle for. And they realized the only way they were going to get there, they had to get away from this state.
So what yes. I find interesting is that it not only affected you, your daughters were even affected by this. And this is the part many people don't think about when it comes to burnout. Your burnout literally becomes the family burnout, because it affects more people than we realize. We always think of it's just that one person going through the burnout, but your daughters literally said, I don't think I want children at this point because what they're seeing. But then also I looked at how they took upon their wings and said, I want to find a new path. I want to carve something different. So I applaud them for finding a new path that's going to give them the fulfillment and the enlightenment and the fulfillment and the purpose that they're pushing towards. But I thank you for bringing it out, because it's such a different view of people understanding that burnout, it doesn't just affect that one person, it affects every single person around you. And so after they got to this point, in the midst of all this that was going on, were you having conversations at the job? Were you trying to get interventions or things to help you deal with the panic attacks or anxiety attacks? Were you reaching out to your EAP? Because, you know, people love to tell you, reach out to your EAP. They should be able to help you. Well, were you able to connect with any of those things?
Honestly, I did reach out and I spoke to HR, and I kind of felt like maybe it was on the manager in that office, the reason why I could never be promoted or I could never, you know, actually receive a raise. And I was always told that they were actually working on it. But it got to the point where the tension in that office got so thick, to the point where I was being threatened to be fired. And I was being told, hey, you should be glad you have a job. And you should be glad we can let you go in today or tomorrow and you can be replaced. And my thing was to HR, who says that to someone? Who makes a person feel like they have to be trampled over to be able to have a job?
Now, what's interesting in this is that you're saying that literally this was coming from your higher ups, basically being threatened at any point that you could be let go. And what I don't understand is, and I say this with as much love and respect, why did you stay in such a toxic environment? I mean, I'm hearing this and I'm like, oh my God, I shudder when I hear you say this, because I'm going, oh my God, this woman has to have literally the patience of Job to stay in the midst of this, because you're being abused at the job. You literally were in an abusive relationship. It just wasn't with your personal life. It was at your employer.
Yes. Well, Ms. Patrice, one of the main reasons why I say is because I had two daughters. I had to have a job. It's not that I wasn't trying to do better, because I'm basically a senior in college and I'm trying to finish an education to receive a degree. So I was looking for something more along those lines, but a lot of things are limited nowadays when a person does not have a degree, and it puts you in a position to where other employers want to treat you and want to offer you less than what you deserve. So it's kind of like jumping out of the pan into the fire. If I'm going to make a move, I'm going to make a big move, and it's going to benefit me and my daughters, not going from worse to something even worse, just so I can leave that job.
I love how you talked about taking that jump, taking that leap. For me, as I hear you talking about it, your moment of burnout became so clear when you started talking about what your daughter said, when you talked about the anxiety, the panic attacks. What was it like the day you made the decision that enough is enough? What was that day like?
Oh my God, it started with me talking with my pastors. And I told her, I said, woman of God, I'm believing in God for something better than this. I cannot believe that God has brought me this far for me to just die on this job. This is not the way I want to go. And so I just had to basically, after my breakdown, I kid you not, I had a really bad breakdown. I had to put my face to the wall. And I was like, Lord, if I ever wanted to believe in you, I'm going to believe in you right now. I cannot see myself going back literally into bondage. You said you were going to do it. So guess what? I am going to stand on that and I am going to move forward no matter what it looks like. You said. So I'm going to take this faith and I'm going to keep on walking forward, do something better because I want better.
I love how you talked about, for you, you knew that whatever you did at this point, it was not going to be going from one thing to another. It was moving to something big. What did that look like? When people talk about moving into something big, what are some practical steps you can give them to walking into something big or being prepared, let me say it that way, to being prepared to moving into something big?
First, you have to purpose in your heart to where you say, no matter what God says, no matter how crazy it sounds, you have enough faith and you have enough trust in God, not only to believe it, but to do it. Our pastor says all the time, our prophet, faith is responding to what's already done. So when God speaks a word, you just have to walk out on that. And you just have to trust. And saying that you trust someone and actually showing someone that you trust them, it's two totally different things. And a lot of times we wrestle with that all the time. I kid you not, the flesh wrestles against the spirit. And you hear it all the time, but you never really understand what it means until you basically set yourself and you position yourself to actually do what God says and not what you want to do.
When you talk about that decision and having that conversation that morning, was there a voice of, should I really step out on this now? Was there moments when you kind of doubted yourself?
Yes, I have to say it. And I always felt like maybe I wasn't really walking in faith if I actually had moments of doubt. But my thing about it is, I think that doubt just kind of comes in to basically to reaffirm that you're doing something that goes against your nature. You're doing something that's taking you outside of your flesh, and now you are operating on a sphere. Spiritual moves are a little bit different from moving outside of your flesh. When you're doing something in your flesh, oh, it's all A, B, C. It's like it's laid out. But when you're doing something in the spirit, that's trust. You're walking by not what you see and with your natural eyes. You're walking by a whole different spiritual sense. So yeah, I can't say I've had a lot of moments where it seems like it was just reaffirmed. Only thing I know is this: Lord, if this is trust, then I'm just going to do. And it doesn't matter what it looks like. If I can't see A to Z, I'm going to do anyway. But that's faith.
So you have made the decision to step out in your faith, to do something different. How, once you stepped out, what did you do to get over or heal from the burnout? Because I found for many people, especially for myself and my own experiences, of burnout, the burnout wanted to hang around. It kind of wanted to be there, wanted me to be a little sad and make me think I had lost something when really I had gained something. I'll talk about my gain a little deeper. What happened? What did you do to overcome and to really heal your burnout? What did you do?
One, I had to step up the ante, well, raise the ante on my prayer time. I had to get to where I started taking more advantage of fasting. I'm not saying I haven't done it before, but if you haven't done it in a while, it's something to get back to. You have to close out the noise. You have to shut the door on your problems. You have to increase your prayer time, your talking to God time, your journal time, your fasting time. That time that you spent consumed worrying about a job, that's the time you give to God, thanking him for what he's already done. So I've been doing a lot of thank you and praise God and hallelujahs. That's really how I got past the burnout.
I love how in your story, your faith has been a big piece for you. I've interviewed quite a few different people in this regard, and I found that everybody had their different stories in this piece. I found that, like, you speak very highly about your faith. I found that other people said, well, my practical was that I had to literally, like we talked about, shut out the noise, that they literally took a couple of days, maybe some weeks. Some of them have gone to weeks where they just shut everything out and just had a moment of, okay, that was the old me. That was the old vision I had for myself, the old reality, as one person stated, and that now I had a new vision for myself. What does your new vision look like? Because so many times we're so used to being that old person or what the old was that we forget we can create a new vision of ourselves. So what does this new vision for you look like?
You're right. I had to, my mind, it's a renewing of the mind. I understand what that means spiritually now. But when I got to where I was no longer consumed by that old me, that old way of doing things, I had to get to the point where I had to recondition my mind. I'm like, you know, I'm so used to doing this and now I'm going to do that. You have to basically break a bunch of habits. And I mean, It doesn't seem like it's a habit because it's work. And it's like, you know, I have become so robotic doing what you want me to do. When I get to where I'm going to do something different, it's not easy, I promise you. And anybody who tells you that it is easy, I can't say they're not telling you true, but it's not easy.
I love how you talked about breaking those old habits. For so many times, especially if you've been in a particular field for quite a bit of time, you find yourself, like you said, kind of being on autopilot, robotic, just kind of going along to get along till you get to where you're trying to go. What was the one habit for you that really needed to be broke?
Oh my God, being walked over and accepting it, because that's the role that I was in because I was trying to hold on to a job.
That's beautiful, because I realize now as you're talking how important boundaries are, not just boundaries in your personal life, but also setting boundaries in your professional life and being honest to be able to say, you know what, I'm not going to entertain having someone speak to me any type of way at a job, and especially in this period now with COVID and COVID 2 and COVID 3 and all these other different names we got going on out here, people find it so interesting. And you even said it, that the boss told you, well, you can be fired and you can be replaced. And the comment that I always say, and I even found myself saying this the other day, you can replace me, but you can't replace my hustle. You can replace me, but you can't replace my dedication. And I think people are so used to making those statements that they don't realize, yeah, you can get a person in the seat, but you won't have a person who has a heart for the job. You won't have a person who says, I'm going to make it my purpose to make sure the business looks good. I can find anybody to fill a seat. Can I find somebody who really wants to do the job is the thing. So it's interesting to hear you talking about breaking those habits. That habit for you, you said you had some things you had to do. Breaking those habits, go a little deeper. For somebody else who is hearing this and saying, hey, you know, I'm in my burnout. I've heard you today. I know there's some things that I'm really burned out about. What would be your last words to them?
We should not become so comfortable with a job to the point where we lose ourselves. We should never get to where we're so dependent on finances or things of the world to where we forget that God is a provider, to where we forget that God is faithful to his word. I mean, anytime you get to the point where you put your trust in man, trust me, you will find out the hard way, and a job will be the best lesson of all to show you that at any time, a person can mistreat you. At any time, a person can put you in a position to where you feel you have to accept it. But once you get to the point where you know who you are, it changes the way you see things. So those things that we once depended on the world for, I promise you, God can treat you a whole lot better than the world can.
I couldn't have said it any better. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you all for tuning in to the Patrice Brantley Show, where on this show, helping others is the name of the game, and we push purpose, positivity, and personal growth.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcasts. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.